Sairam, dear listeners, offering my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. I invite you to this week's episode of the Gita series, A Triune Pilgrimage. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, coming to you live from our studios in Prashanthi Nilayam. This is a series where we've taken up the study of the Bhagavad Gita, one of the most important texts in Sanatana Dharma. Swami has spoken extensively on this text. Swami has written a commentary on this text in the form of the Gita Vahini. And on many, many occasions, Swami has quoted extensively from this very, very beautiful and profound text. And we've taken this opportunity of Thursday Live to go through this text in detail. We started the text or started with the verses of this text last week. Probably before we move on to this week's episode, I'll give you a short summary of what we had discussed last time around. I briefly gave you the context of the Bhagavad Gita. As we all know, it is one of the components of this epic called Mahabharata, composed by Sage Vyasa. So I had started off by giving you a context of where in that Mahabharata it appears, that it appears in the Bhishma Parva, one of the books of the Mahabharata. And the Bhagavad Gita begins with two characters, Sanjaya and Dhritarashtra. We discussed about who is Sanjaya, who is Dhritarashtra, and when he actually does relay the Bhagavad Gita. Most of us believe that Bhagavad Gita was relayed to this king even as it was being delivered to Arjuna, but that was not the case. As we saw last week, it was only after the 10th day of the battle when Bhishma falls, Sanjaya comes back and informs the king about this event of Bhishma falling, and that is when Dhritarashtra asks him what are the events that occurred in the 10 days that have gone by, and that's when Sanjaya starts relating to him the events from the beginning of the war till that 10th day, and that is when he actually also shares what the message of the Bhagavad Gita as told by Lord Krishna to Arjuna. And of course, the most important part of last week was a beautiful explanation that Swami has given as to how we have to look at this entire epic of the Mahabharata itself. What do we mean by Hastinapura? What is referred to as Dharmakshetra in the human body or in the human life? And who are the Kauravas and Pandavas? Why are one set evil? Why are one set noble? What is this battle that is happening? When does that battle come to an end? What is the role that the Lord plays? And in the human context, who is Lord Krishna in that sense, in this battle that is happening within? We spoke about the quality of mamakaram or the attachment, where when one gets blinded by this mamakaram, that's when all the trouble begins, right? And then we spoke about the verses where Duryodhana goes to Dronacharya and speaks of the great heroes who are aligned or who are arrayed in the Pandava army, and he says that these are all the great warriors who have assembled to fight on behalf of the Pandavas. And we spoke of how he kind of hinted at a bit of nervousness when he saw all of these heroes. Some of the people who were there also irritated him because he felt that they should have been on his side. But nevertheless, that was those were the verses that we had gone through. I think we went through the first six verses of that first chapter. Well, the verses that we will be going through today also do not necessarily, are not really the most important verses even of the first chapter. Of course, it is not for us to declare or to conclude that these are not important verses. If in all his wisdom, Sage Vyasa decided that these should be part of the Bhagavad Gita, I think he must have a good reason for that. But nevertheless, the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is more important because of the monologue which Arjuna starts involving himself in. But that also comes a little later in the first chapter. We are not yet gone into that. And that's again a very, very important part of the first chapter, the part of Bhagavad Gita itself, because we will be able to relate so much to what Arjuna says. The nobility of Arjuna is actually quite relatable to, but of course that we'll have to come to when we come to that part. The verses that we will be going through today mostly will be related to some of the characters who are there in the battlefield, who are ready to fight in this battle of Dharmakshetra. of Kurukshetra. So maybe even as we are mentioning some of those characters, we will speak about a brief history of each of those characters. Why are they being mentioned? And of course, every story of the Mahabharata has a lesson for us. So even though this is not really the essential part of the Bhagavad Gita where we have much to learn from, the stories of these characters also have a lesson to teach us, and so we will try to go into all of that. So, as I said, we have gone through 6 verses so far. So let's begin with the 7th verse. We stopped at a point where Duryodhana has surveyed the Pandava army, and he has told Duryodhana that these are the great ones which have assembled on behalf of the Pandavas. The 7th verse is when Duryodhana tells Dronacharya that our army is no less. So we will listen to the 7th verse in the 1st chapter. As I said last week, these are rendered by one of our brothers, an alumni and an active member of the Sai organization, Brother Shyam, who is a regular part of some of our programs on Radio Sai. He's been part of the Vedam Tutor quite often, and he's been very kind to record very, very beautifully and very clearly, as you would have heard last week, the verses of the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll listen to the rendition in his voice of the 7th verse, and we'll take it on from there.
Asmakam tu visishtaye tannibodha dvijottama nayaka mama sainyasya sanyarthan tan bravimite.
The meaning of that verse is, also know, O best among the twice born, the names of those who are most distinguished amongst ourselves, the leaders of my army. These I name for your information. So that's the summarized meaning of that verse. And one thing which is very obvious from the way Duryodhana is speaking is he's trying his best to pamper the ego in the sense of Dronacharya. As we said, Dronacharya, though a Brahmin, who is referred to by Duryodhana in this verse itself as Dvijottama. Dvija is a generic name which is used for Brahmins. Dvija means the twice born. So the belief is that when a child is born, that is his first birth, but after his Upanayanam or Upakarna, where he is given this sacred thread, and he is initiated into the Gayatri Mantra, it is spoken of as a second birth. That's why those who are initiated into the Gayatri Mantra, especially in those days, they were referred to as Brahmins. They used to be called Dvija, the twice borns, right? The word Dvija is interestingly also used for birds, because birds are supposed to be born once when the egg is laid and then when they hatch eventually, right? So this word Dvija is used for Brahmins as well as birds in Sanskrit. So Duryodhana refers to Dronacharya as Dvijottama. He says, among the Brahmins, you are a very special one. You're a special one among the twice born. That is the meaning of that appellation, Dvijottama. And clearly Duryodhana is trying to mollify the ego of Dronacharya, because even though born a Brahmin, he is given to a sense of revenge. If he is not pleased, if he is not kept in good books, then you could have trouble from him, as King Drupada had seen, and we had briefly gone through that story last week. So clearly Duryodhana is trying to be very kind to him, and he says that there are very, very great kings and warriors who have assembled to fight on our behalf, and let me name some of them. So that is the meaning of the 7th verse. We'll go to the 8th verse of the 1st chapter.
Bhavan bhishmascha karnascha kripascha samitinjayaha ashvathama vikarnascha saumadattis tathaivacha.
So that's the verse where he names some of the great warriors who have assembled on behalf of the Kaurava army or on behalf of Duryodhana. And interesting, many of these characters who have named are very, very great warriors, and we'll probably spend a little time talking about each one of them. As we said, you know, he first starts by referring to Dronacharya himself. He says, Bhavan, he says, yourself. And he names him as the first warrior on his side. And in fact, he names him even before Bhishma. Clear sign that he is trying to praise Dronacharya or please him in a manner so that he fights valiantly on his side, because he knows that Dronacharya's favorite disciples are all on the other side, right? So he starts by saying, Bhavan, yourself, Bhimascha Karnascha. He says there is Bhishmascha Karnascha. He says there is Bhishma, the great warrior, and there is Karna. Interestingly, Karna is not yet part of the battle, because the story goes that Bhishma refuses to fight as long as Karna is part of the army fighting on behalf of the Kauravas. Again, there are different versions of the story. There is one version which says that it was Karna who decided not to fight, because apparently when they are strategizing for the war, each one of the warriors are categorized, as we had seen last week, a Maharathi or Atirathi, and some of these categories based on how many men you can fight against on your own. That is one of the categories which are used. And very clearly, Bhishma purposely downgrades Karna, and he says that, you know, I feel that this is what Karna is. He's not a Maharathi. I don't see him as a Maharathi. And hurt by the insult, Karna refuses to fight under the banner of Bhishma, because Bhishma is the commander-in-chief. So when the battle begins, actually Karna is not part of the battle. It's only after Bhishma falls, Karna comes and begins to fight on behalf of the Kauravas. But nevertheless, Duryodhana mentions that Karna is also there, because one of the people on whom Duryodhana has placed a lot of confidence is Karna, because he knows that the great archer Arjuna on the other side can be countered only by this great archer Karna, right? And that itself is a huge story and a lot of lessons to learn from that, because Karna was a very noble person. He was not like the other Kauravas, but merely because he had received a lot of special attention and special gifts from Duryodhana, including being made a king. Duryodhana comes to his rescue in that sense. It's a long story. I'm sure most of you will be aware of that. But it's a very, very great lesson that you might have all the great qualities in you, the noble qualities in you, but if you become indebted to a person who is crooked, indebted to a person who has negative ideas or selfish motives, then it becomes all the more dangerous. All your goodness seems to be directed, or in that sense misdirected, right? In the wrong sense. And a typical example of that is Karna. In fact, Bhishma also is a typical example of that. And very interestingly, in this verse it says Bhishmascha Karnascha, because even Bhishma is one who has received much of attention and royal treatment from Duryodhana, especially when the Pandavas are away in the forest. That is why Swami very often would quote a very beautiful incident where, after Bhishma has fallen on the bed of arrows, the Pandavas and Draupadi go to pay respects to him, and Bhishma gives him, I think that part of the Mahabharata is referred to as the Shanti Parva, where Bhishma gives Yudhishthira a huge discourse on Dharma, and because he knows that he's going to be the king now, so he gives a huge discourse on Dharma and how to rule the kingdom. And at that moment, Draupadi is not able to contain herself. She actually gives out a small laughter. And Swami would say that it is not very respectful for women or youngsters to laugh like this in front of elders when they are giving them advice. But and immediately Yudhishthira and the others look at Draupadi and say that, no, why are you behaving like this? This is not right behavior to laugh when the grandsire is giving us a discourse. And Bhishma actually does not get offended. Bhishma says that, I know the meaning behind her laughter, because she's saying that I fought on the side of Duryodhana, and all this advice that I'm giving you actually had to be given to Duryodhana. I let Duryodhana do whatever he wanted to. I even fought on his behalf, and today I'm giving you the advice which I should have given him and his brothers. And that is why Draupadi is laughing. And then Bhishma explains why he is able to give this discourse now. He says, because of the arrows that have been shot through my body, all the blood which was nurtured by the food that I ate from the Kauravas has been drained out of this body and sense has come back into my mind. Imagine a great hero, a great noble soul like Bhishma telling like this. And that is why, yes, we need to be noble. Yes, we need to maintain our goodness. But it becomes all the more important to ensure that we do not get indebted to a person who is not noble. We may be noble ourselves, but if we are in the banner of a person who is not as noble and has selfish motives and has evil plans in his mind, we become fodder in those evil plans. And a perfect example of that, or examples of that, is Bhishma and Karna. So Duryodhana says that, Dronacharya, you are there, Bhavan, and Bhishmascha Karnascha. Then he says, Kripascha Samitinjayaha. Kripa is the Kula Guru of the Kaurava race. He is referred to as Kripacharya, right? So in this particular phrase, Duryodhana says, Kripascha Samitinjayaha. He says, the Kripa who has never lost in a battle, that is what he refers to. And I'll come to what is the meaning of that, why he says that. And then he says, Ashwatthama Vikarnascha. He says, Ashwatthama and Vikarna. Ashwatthama is the son of Dronacharya and a very, very good friend of Duryodhana, because in many ways he's as evil as Duryodhana in that sense. Very good friends. And Vikarna is again one of the Kauravas, but we'll come to him. A very interesting character, and very interestingly, I think these are reasons why Vyasa names some of these characters in the Bhagavad Gita, so that we probably might go back into their history and learn something from that. And the last hero that he names is Saumadatthihi. Saumadatthi means the son of Somadatta. Again, a very interesting character, much to learn from the story of the son of Somadatta, who actually his name is Bhurishrava. We'll come to that also. Now, Kripacharya, the first teacher of the Pandavas and the Kauravas, even before Dronacharya comes along to teach the art of warfare to the Pandavas and the Kauravas, it was Kripacharya who was the first teacher of the Pandavas and the Kauravas. Interestingly, Kripacharya's twin sister, whose name is Kripi, he is the wife of Dronacharya. And that's how Drona comes to become, comes to Hastinapura and becomes the teacher through the recommendation of Kripacharya. Now, Kripacharya and Kripi, his sister, were actually adopted by Shantanu, the father of Bhishma. And that's how they come to Hastinapura, and that's how they have been taking care and have been made the official preceptor of the lineage. Duryodhana refers to Kripacharya as Samitinjaya, which means the always victorious in battle. And it's actually very propitious that he's saying that, because eventually at the end of the war, one of the great warriors who survived the battle in the Kaurava side is Kripacharya. And of course there is no surprise in that, because according to the epics, there are 7 Chiranjeevis who occur during the various epics in the Ramayana, in the Mahabharata, and the other Puranas. Many of these names are mentioned. These are 7 individuals who are given a boon, or who have won that through their penance, that they will live till the end of the Kali Yuga, or the end of this cycle of the Manvantaras, as they are called. Each Manvantara is made of 4 Yugas, right? Satyuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. So these are 7 Chiranjeevis who are told that they will live till the end of Kali Yuga, and only when the final dissolution of the world happens, they will also shed their body. So which means these are all great heroes who live amidst us even today. And they're probably not in the same form, or probably not in a form which is directly accessible to us, but it is believed that they do live even to this day. And there are many, many monks who claim that they have met some of these people in their pilgrimages across the Himalayas and other holy places. These 7 Chiranjeevis, of course, are interestingly, 2 are mentioned in this verse itself. One is Kripacharya, as I mentioned. The second one is Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama is also supposed to be a Chiranjeevi who did not die in the battle, because he played a very gruesome role in the end of the battle. He was the person who stealthily kills all the children of the Pandavas, who are all, I think, teenagers then. In the night when they are asleep, he goes and kills all of them. And among the Chiranjeevis, probably the most, not the most noble one among the Chiranjeevis is Ashwatthama, because he lives on with a curse because of that heinous act of his. Krishna curses him that, you know, he will roam around the world till the end of time with sores which will be oozing pus and will not heal at all. That is a curse that he is given because of his heinous acts. So Kripacharya and Ashwatthama are two Chiranjeevis. The epics mention five other Chiranjeevis. One is Bali Chakravarti. We just celebrated the Onam celebrations, and Swami would often say that it is believed that during the Onam celebration, King Bali comes back to his kingdom, which is the present day Kerala, to bless his citizens who are celebrating the Onam festival. So Bali Chakravarti is supposed to be a Chiranjeevi, where in the Vamana Avatar, he's not killed or vanquished, but he's actually sent away to the nether world, and he is given this blessing of surfacing during that festival of Onam. So Bali is one of the Chiranjeevis. One other Chiranjeevi is Sage Vyasa himself, the composer of the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita, the one who's given us that, one of the greatest sages mentioned in our Sanatan Dharma, Sage Vyasa, who's supposed to have codified the Vedas. That's why he's called Veda Vyasa. Written the Mahabharata, written 18 Puranas, as Swami would mention. At the end of the Mahabharata, he's not satisfied with this great work of his, and he goes on to write the Srimad Bhagavatam, which again is one of the greatest texts which we had the opportunity to go through during the afternoon satsang in the form of the Bhagavat Vahini. So Sage Vyasa is the other Chiranjeevi. The other Chiranjeevi is Hanuman. Of course, no introduction is required for Hanuman to any of us. Lord Hanuman, who has given this blessing, even as Rama chooses to discard his avataric body, he calls Hanuman and he tells him that he wishes that Hanuman should live on till the end of time. And that's why we believe, and whenever Rama is invoked, is thought about, the story of Ramayana is spoken about, the songs of Rama are sung, it is believed that Lord Hanuman is present there to enjoy that rendition, right? Because that it is said that Hanuman is a Chiranjeevi. Again, there are many, many legends of Hanuman being cited even till this day. The other two Chiranjeevis, one of the Chiranjeevis has a mention in the Mahabharata too, which is Parashurama. Parashurama is supposed to be the guru of Bhishma. He is also the guru of Karna. I think he is also the guru of Dronacharya too. He is again an avatar of Lord Vishnu, who is supposed to be a Chiranjeevi living till the end of time. And the seventh Chiranjeevi is supposed to be Vibhishana. Of course, I think there are a couple of other names which come up. Different scriptures speak of different people as Chiranjeevis, but this is primarily the list of seven Chiranjeevis, of whom Kripacharya is one of them. Vibhishana is supposed to be one of the Chiranjeevis blessed by Rama to live till the end of time. So these are the characters that he names, and few others that he names. As I said, he names one of the Kaurava brothers, and he names Vikarna. Vikarna is probably, you could say, the third famous Kaurava brother after Duryodhana and Dushasana. Dushasana's name comes, he is almost like a shadow of Duryodhana. Wherever Duryodhana goes, he goes along. But among the most valorous of the Kauravas, Vikarna is spoken of as one of them. Now this Vikarna is a very, very interesting character, because when in the Kaurava court Draupadi was being dishonored, when Bhishmacharya did not speak up, Kripacharya and Dronacharya did not speak up, Dhritarashtra, the blind king, did not have the courage to open his mouth, it was Vikarna who got up and said, what is being done is wrong. Being a Kaurava, being a younger brother of Duryodhana, it was he who had the guts to get up and say that what is happening in this court is wrong. We are all answerable to this sister-in-law of ours, and if we do not answer her, we are paving way for the clan's doom, right? He's such a noble person, even though brought up in that, in that family. That's why he's a standout character in that sense. So much so that later during the war, it goes that when Bhima is, I think, is pursuing one of the charioteers, I don't remember in which battle exactly it happens, Vikarna comes and tries to stop Bhima, right? He challenges Bhima for a duel. And Bhima refuses to fight with him. Bhima says that, look, if there is one Kaurava whom I don't want to kill, it is you. I don't want to kill you. So, you know, please move away and let me pursue the person I'm after right now. But Vikarna says, look, that day, that was my dharma. I felt that what was happening was wrong. I stood up and said, but today I'm fighting on behalf of my brother. So this is my dharma. So if you have to kill me, so be it. Fight me, vanquish me, and then move on. So on that day when Bhima fights Vikarna, he kills Vikarna in that battle, and it's a very, very moving episode during the battle, because when Bhima kills Vikarna, apparently Bhima breaks down. Bhima cries and he says, oh Vikarna, you were such a noble one, I had to kill you. And he says, what a horrible war this is, that noble people like Vikarna and so many more other noble people are going to die in the course of this battle. He is such a noble person, such a great hero, this Vikarna. So Duryodhana mentions Vikarna as one of the great warriors who have assembled to fight on his behalf. Then, as I said, he mentions the name of the son of Somadatta. The name of that warrior is Bhurishrava. Bhurishrava is the son of Somadatta. Now, who is this Somadatta? Somadatta is the son of a king of Balika. I think the name of that kingdom is Balk, and the king was also called Balika. And interestingly, the kingdom of Balk, I think even now it is there, it is probably the western side of Afghanistan, and what is referred to in the historical text as Bactria. I think even in the history of Europe and Central Asia, it comes. Bactria is supposed to be one of the flourishing kingdoms. So where Bactria is today, that is where this kingdom of Balk was. Gives you an idea of how far spread this battle was. The king comes all the way from there. But interestingly, this king Balika is actually the elder brother of Shantanu. So in that sense, he is really supposed to be the king of Hastinapura. But he pursues this kingdom of Balk, which is on the northwestern side of Afghanistan. That's how he moves away from Hastinapura, and Shantanu becomes the king of Hastinapura, and eventually Dhritarashtra and Pandu were his, born in that same lineage, right? So this Somadatta, interestingly, has another story to him, because Somadatta fights with another warrior called Shini, right? I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that name right. I think Shini or Sini. Somadatta fights with a warrior called Sini in his pursuit to win the hand of a princess called Devaki. And we all know who Princess Devaki is. She eventually becomes the mother of Lord Krishna. So when the Swayamvara, or when that occasion happens, when Devaki's bridegroom is being sought for Princess Devaki, Somadatta and this warrior called Shini fight. Shini fights on behalf of Vasudeva, who eventually marries Devaki, and Lord Krishna is born to them. That is why Krishna has the name Vasudeva. So who is this warrior Shini? Interestingly, Shini is the grandfather of another warrior who is participating in the war, Satyaki. We spoke about Satyaki last week because he is mentioned as one of the people on the Pandava side. So this Shini is the grandfather of Satyaki. Now, as we all know, Vasudeva is also, apart from being the father of Lord Krishna, he is also the brother of Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas. So that is one of the reasons why Somadatta, Bhurishrava, his son, and his father, Balika, all of them line up on the side of the Kaurava army to fight against the Pandavas because of this long battle which has happened between Vasudeva, Devaki, Kunti, and the family of King Balika. right? And there is, again, a very interesting episode which happens, which again, you know, very, very beautifully connected, and how it is so important that at all times, as we will go through the Bhagavad Gita, we'll see one of the most important messages that Lord Krishna gives is the ability to control oneself, the ability to control one's anger, the ability to control one's greed, one's desire, because you cannot have a good character in the absence of such self-control. And these are all stories which show that great warriors, at a moment when they lose themselves in anger, lose themselves in revenge, end up doing things which are wrong, right? So that is why it is so important to cultivate self-control, and that is why a good part of the Bhagavad Gita is about how to control the mind, how to control the senses, and why that is so very important. Going back to the story of Bhurishrava, and as we all know, I don't know exactly on which day of the battle, the Chakravyuha is formed, where Drona forms this very, very complex battle formation, and we know Arjuna's son Abhimanyu gets into it. He only knows to enter this battle formation, but does not know how to come out of it. So he enters this battle formation, and that's when he gets killed in a very adharmic way, where because he is the only warrior who's surrounded by these many warriors, and he's killed in that Chakravyuha. So the next day, Arjuna is absolutely infuriated. So he takes a vow that he will kill this warrior called Jayadratha. And I think Jayadratha is the brother-in-law of Duryodhana. So he vows to kill Jayadratha because he is one who plays a very major role in the killing of Abhimanyu. So he takes a vow that by sunset, if I do not vanquish Jayadratha, I am going to immolate myself. I'm going to kill myself. This is the vow that I've taken. So when this news reaches the Kaurava camp, they feel that this is it. We have managed to get things to a point where now Arjuna is going to kill himself. If we manage to protect Jayadratha for this one day in the battle, we are sure that Arjuna is going to be removed from the picture, and without Arjuna, Pandavas are in no way going to be able to defend themselves. So again, another battle formation is formed to protect Jayadratha, and it is at that time when Arjuna is pursuing Jayadratha. As I think last week also I had mentioned, most of these formations are in such a way that when a chariot is going, they would have defendants behind, one on the left side, one on the right side, or one behind, and that's how they would make a formation to barge into the enemy's ranks. So when Arjuna was pursuing Jayadratha in this manner, he was being followed by Satyaki and Bhima to help him go through this particular formation. At that time, Bhurishrava was one of the warriors who were positioned in that formation to block Arjuna, right? But the moment he sees Satyaki, his revenge kicks in. He says that here is the Satyaki, his grandfather was the one who took away the opportunity from my father. He defeated my father in this battle. So he looks at Satyaki, he comes out of his position from where he is supposed to defend. He falls out of that position and he starts pursuing Satyaki in a battle. But this complex formation that Dronacharya has made is so intense that by the time Bhurishrava comes and invites Satyaki for a duel, Satyaki is actually already very fatigued, having come through this entire formation. But being a valorous warrior himself, he does not refuse this offer to fight. So he takes on this battle with Bhurishrava. He loses in the battle with the bow and arrow. And finally they come down to battling with bare arms. And that is when Satyaki is completely, out of energy. So Bhurishrava defeats him and he drags him all across the battlefield, almost ready to finish him off. And at that time, it is not right for Bhurishrava to kill him because in that sense, Satyaki is unarmed, he is tired, you're not supposed to battle with a person like that. That is one of the rules of the battle that they had all agreed upon. So Bhurishrava is about to kill this unarmed Satyaki when Arjuna, who is pursuing Jayadratha, is told by Krishna, right? And this is where the Lord's presence with Arjuna comes into the significance of that, the Lord being the charioteer of Krishna, of Arjuna, comes into play. Because Krishna tells Arjuna that, Satyaki is in danger now, let's go and protect Satyaki. Because Satyaki, all said and done, is also a very important commander in the army. So they turn back, they go to where Satyaki is about to be killed by Bhurishrava, and Krishna tells Arjuna to fire an arrow and chop off one of the hands of Bhurishrava. And that's what Arjuna does. Now, Bhurishrava turns back and he is enraged. He says, how can you do this to me? You have not invited me for a battle and you have fired an arrow at me without any intimation or without any warning. This is not right. And then Arjuna tells Bhurishrava that, but what were you doing? What were you doing right now? You were trying to kill an unarmed warrior. Wasn't that a dharma? And what were you doing yesterday when Abhimanyu was attacked? Wasn't that a dharma? And when Arjuna raises these questions, Bhurishrava realizes that he, in his anger, in his sense of revenge, what he had done was totally unacceptable of a warrior of his caliber. He immediately drops arms and he sits down in Padmasana and he sacrifices his position in the army. At that very moment, Satyaki, who had fallen in a swoon, he gets up, he picks up a sword and kills off Bhurishrava even before Arjuna and Krishna could stop him. Right? Because what Satyaki was doing was also a dharma. And thereafter, the Pandava army and the Kauravas together rebuke and ridicule Satyaki. They say that what you've done is not right and we do not accept this. And interestingly, this episode of Satyaki killing Bhurishrava, who was not ready for the battle, was a point which was taken up in the Prabhasa Kshetra when Kritavarma and Satyaki begin to fight. That is the end of the Yadava clan. Again, that's a very long story. After all, the battle is over. When the end of the Krishna avatar comes, that is when Krishna sends all the Yadavas to Prabhasa Kshetra for a pilgrimage, and there they all get drunk, all the Yadavas, and a fight or an argument ensues between these two heroes, Satyaki, who fought on the side of the Pandavas, and Kritavarma, who fought on the side of the Kauravas. And at that time, Kritavarma raises this point and ridicules Satyaki. Do you remember you killed a warrior who was unarmed? You performed an act of adharma. And that argument becomes ugly and they start fighting, they kill each other. And that's the beginning of the Yadava race. I mean, it's interesting. All of these stories are so very well connected. But how the idea of revenge blinds a noble person, how the idea of anger of that moment blinds a person and makes one do wrong things. These are all signs of that. These are all examples of that. Because the theory of why all of these should be avoided will come as we go through the Bhagavad Gita. But that's why the Mahabharata itself is supposed to be referred to as the Panchama Veda, as the fifth Veda, because the essence of what is being taught through the Mahabharata is in the Bhagavad Gita. But the examples, the anecdotes, the stories which support the theory are strewed all through this epic of Mahabharata. And some of these stories are related to characters who are being referred to in this particular verse. So that is the eighth verse of that first chapter. We'll go to the ninth verse and we will see what Duryodhana says thereafter.
Anye cha bahavah shura madarthe tyakta jivitah nana shastra praharana sarve yuddha visharada.
The meaning of that verse goes, and also many other heroes who are ready to give up their lives for my sake, armed with various weapons and missiles, all well skilled in battle. That's the summary meaning of that particular verse. Interesting thing about this verse is, Duryodhana says a particular phrase. He says, Mad arthe tyakta jivitaha. The translation of this verse from the translation that I read out was, people who are ready to give up their life for my sake, is the translation which is often given. But interestingly, the words, the way he utters it, Mad arthe tyakta jivitaha, he says that these are all great heroes. There are many, many other great heroes who have sacrificed their life for me. He uses the past tense or he uses the definite tense or whatever that would be referred to as. He does not say ready to sacrifice. He says they have sacrificed their life for me. You know, oftentimes in Indian tradition, they would say that when you say something, you would say things which are inspired by divinity, right? You would say things which you do not intend to say. You would want to say it in a different manner, but you say it in a manner which is, which is almost like prophetic, which is how things are going to pan out. So in that sense, this is something which Duryodhana says, you could say by mistake or inspired by divine providence. He says, there are many, many great warriors here who have chosen to sacrifice their life for me, which means they know that they're signing up for death by siding with Duryodhana, and literally, that is what Duryodhana says. They've all come here ready to die for me. And he says, Nana Shastra Praharanaha, which means having many kinds of weapons. And he says, Shastra and Praharana. Shastras are weapons, and often Shastras are described as weapons which are handheld. The maze, the sword, I think even to an extent the bow and arrow and all of these weapons which are held in the hand. Praharanahas are weapons which are aimed at and shot. I'm saying the bow probably features in both of these, because praharana also means that which is propelled by mantras or incantations. As you would have often seen the televised version of the Mahabharata, many of these heroes, when they are firing an arrow, they would chant something and fire. And interestingly, when they do a yajna in front of a fire, that which is offered to the fire after chanting something is also referred to as praharana, apparently. So anything that is offered with a mantra or an incantation or a chant, because that will propel this particular thing that you're sending forth to complete its task. So he says that there are these many, many great warriors who are assembled here, who are not only good at, who are not only having Shastra, but they are also having the Praharana, the ability to fire such arrows or missiles, which are not only, attack based on the physical might of the person, but also on the ability of that person to invoke some deity and use that particular weapon. And he says, and these are all people who are very, very well versed in the science of warfare. Because as the little that we have seen, we can make out that it's not simply two armies coming and beating each other's up. There's so much of strategy involved. There's so much of nuance involved in the warfare. So when we say that these are all people who is a Maharathi, who can fight 10,000 people attacking him, he can save himself, he can save his charioteer and the horses that are yoked to the chariot. When we say that that is the description of a Maharathi, it involves a lot of skills. So he says that there are many, many such heroes who are assembled here, who know the art of warfare, who are also experts in the science of warfare. So that's what Duryodhana says in this 9th verse. We'll go to the 10th verse. It's a very interesting verse, in my opinion. We'll listen to the 10th verse and we'll discuss about that.
Aparyaptam tadasmakam balam bhishma bhirakshitam paryaptam tvidametesham balam bhima bhirakshitam.
The meaning of that particular verse, the 10th shloka, is our strength is immeasurable and we are perfectly protected by Grandfather Bhishma. Whereas the strength of the Pandavas, carefully protected by Bhima, is limited. The reason why I was saying that this is a very interesting verse is, one, the beautiful composition by Vyasa comes forth in this particular verse, and also the speciality of the language of Sanskrit itself. What a profound and what a deep, subtle language this is. Because the words that he uses to say that our army is immeasurable and their army is limited, aparyaptam and paryaptam, these are the two words that are used in the shloka. The word paryaptam actually means sufficient, right? The word paryaptam, which he uses, means sufficient. So the antonym of paryaptam, which is aparyaptam, should mean insufficient, right? But when you use the word aparyaptam by itself, if it is not coupled with this word paryaptam, aparyaptam could also mean unlimited, boundless, or limitless, right? So that is why I was saying that it's a very special usage, because he says aparyaptam tadasmakam. He says our army is unlimited, uses the word aparyaptam, and he says paryaptam, the Pandava army is paryaptam. And the reason why this usage is so very beautiful is, it could even mean the other way around. It could even mean that our army is insufficient, even though it is being marshaled and commanded by a great hero like Bhishma, and their army seems to be sufficient and well equipped, even though it is being marshaled and commanded by somebody much, much more junior like Bhima, right? And that is why this is a very beautiful, because even if we go and see the translation of this particular verse by various translators and scholars, you would find it's almost like 50-50. Some of them feel that Duryodhana is very proud of his army and he's saying that we are well covered. Some of them say that no, actually Duryodhana is saying that why am I feeling that my army is insufficient? So this verse is translated both ways, but I think this is where the greatness of Vyasa as a composer comes forth, because he is saying that, Duryodhana is not, if you read the character of Duryodhana through the Mahabharata, he is not a person who will concede that he is not confident. That is not the nature of Duryodhana. So in that sense, I think the meaning of this verse should mean that he is saying that we are well off. We seem to be having greater might and military strength compared to the Pandavas. But among the many words that Vyasa could have used, he uses these words, paryaptam and aparyaptam, because he says that in spite of his chest beating that Duryodhana is doing, saying that we seem to be well equipped, he is also revealing his nervousness in the manner in which he is using these words. He's saying that somehow I feel they seem to be sufficient, because it's very interesting in the sense that comparing the two armies, the Kaurava army is clearly more mightier than the Pandava army, because the Mahabharata says 11 Akshauhinis have assembled on behalf of the Kauravas, whereas only 7 Akshauhinis have 7 Akshauhinis. Akshauhinis means divisions, because that has, I think, there's a number which goes with that, 21,870 chariots and elephants and 65,000 cavalry or something like that. That's what constitutes one Akshauhini. So there are 11 Akshauhinis fighting on behalf of the Kauravas, but there are only 7 Akshauhinis fighting on behalf of the Pandavas. So it is quite understandable that Duryodhana is saying that we seem to be mightier than them, but he is using a word which displays his hidden nervousness, because he knows that there is something insufficient in our side, even though we have larger numbers, even though our commander is much, much more experienced and renowned than the commander on that side. And I think this also is a hint that the composer Vyasa is leaving to us, because however mighty you might be, however large may be the support of yours from the world, if you are on the side of adharma, you're bound to be nervous. You're bound to be, worried about the outcome. And that is the nature of life itself. Because if you know that you are truthful, if you know that you are doing the right thing, you do not need anybody's support. You do not need anyone to come and tell you that I will stand by you, whatever happens. There is a strange sense of courage and confidence that comes when you're doing the right thing. And this is not rocket science. I think each one of us can vouch for this. When we have done the right thing, there is a strange sense of courage that comes forth from within. And when you're doing something wrong, similarly, there is a nervousness which comes, just like how Duryodhana is displaying right here. Even though he's managed to, the way he collects these 11 Akshauhinis, we know one of the episodes which we spoke about is how he gets the Narayani Sena from Lord Krishna. And similarly, in many manners, he collects some of the allies. He ensures that people side with him rather than the Pandavas, and that's how he collects this army, right? But in spite of all this might, in spite of having Bhishma, who is supposed to be one of the greatest warriors of their times, in spite of having Kripacharya, who is a Chiranjeevi, in spite of having Ashwatthama, who is a Chiranjeevi, in spite of having Dronacharya, who cannot be ever defeated in a battle, in spite of all of these people, Duryodhana is displaying nervousness, because that is what happens when you're doing something which is wrong. You might have the whole world by your side, but you will feel a certain kind of nervousness. And that is what Swami would say. The peace that the Pandavas had living in the forest for those 12 years, Duryodhana could not enjoy that peace, even though he was living in the palace. Right? Because when we look at these characters, we often think that, you know, what did the Pandavas get? They suffered all through their life. But Swami would say, but that is only the external thing that you're seeing. You have no idea what is the peace and happiness they felt inside, because of the fact that, one, they were doing always the right thing, they were always on the path of Dharma, and because they were on the path of Dharma, they had the support of Lord Krishna, and that confidence and joy that came, even though in the worldly sense they seem to be losing out all through the epic of the Mahabharata, they win only right in the end, right? Because if you look at the story, that's what it appears. Doing all the wrong things, it looks like the Kauravas enjoyed for a longer time compared to the Pandavas, but that is not the case. Swami would say that when you're doing the right thing, the whole world might look at you with pity and say that, oh, you're suffering, but you will have a certain peace and satisfaction and confidence and courage that comes from within, and that is what is seen here. The other thing which we have to keep in mind when we're going through this particular section of the first chapter, where Duryodhana's nervousness and confidence and is, whatever dialogues that he's speaking here, very, very similarly, we are going to see Arjuna also speak out, and we will see the difference in emotion in these two great heroes, who are very, very confident. Arjuna is also very confident. Duryodhana is also very confident, because he is no less a warrior himself, but you can see the difference in approach in the two of them. But here for now, you can very, very clearly see that Duryodhana is not very confident, even though he has a very, very mighty army backing him. And this verse also shows a little bit about Duryodhana's thinking of Bhima, right? He knows that Bhima is a very, very great warrior, because they know each other, that if one can counter Duryodhana, that is Bhima. If anybody can counter Bhima, that can only be Duryodhana. They know each other's might. But in spite of that, in this verse, Duryodhana speaks as though their army is commanded after all by Bhima. Right? And that again is, he's trying to conceal his jealousy of Bhima and his fear of Bhima, in the sense of saying that it is after all Bhima who is fighting from that side. Probably we'll just take one more verse, the 11th verse, and we'll end with that, and we'll come back next week. So the 11th verse in the first chapter.
Ayaneshu cha sarveshu yatha bhagam avasthitaha bhishma meva bhirakshantu bhavantas sarva evahi.
So this is the 11th verse, the meaning of which is, therefore, all of you, stationed in your respective positions in the several divisions of the army, protect Bhishma alone. This is an interesting verse, because he, as we said, so much of Duryodhana's confidence is actually placed on Bhishma, because Bhishma has a boon of Ichcha Mrityu. That is, he chooses when he will die. Right, that is the boon which his father Shantanu bestows upon him, that nobody can kill him. He dies only when he chooses that he should die, and Swami has spoken so many times about it, especially during the Sankranti festival. Swami would speak about Bhishma, because he chooses to shed his body during the Uttarayanam, which comes at the festival of Sankranti. Because Swami would say he held his life, even though he was on a bed of arrows, he did not die, because he wanted to die in the auspicious moment of the Uttarayanam. So Bhishma was this great warrior. First of all, very difficult to defeat him in a battle, but he was also insulated by this boon of Ichcha Mrityu, or he will choose when he will die. And that is why Duryodhana had a lot of confidence on him, because he felt that with Bhishma on his side, with Dronacharya and Kripacharya on his side, his army was literally, indefeatable in that sense. It was invincible. But there was one problem with Bhishma. That was a warrior on the other side by name Shikhandi. Now Shikhandi was the daughter or the son, the way, whichever way we would like to look at it, of Drupada, the father of Queen Draupadi. Now Shikhandi, there are many, many versions of the story. I don't know which exactly is the one which the Mahabharata speaks of. I've not had the time to go into that. One version of the story is Shikhandi is born as a girl, Shikhandini, and eventually she prays to Lord Shiva and becomes a man eventually, and then participates in the war. Bhishma says that, see, Shikhandini was a girl by birth, so as a dharma, I will not fight against the woman. So if Shikhandi comes in the battlefield, I will not raise arms. The other version of the story is that Shikhandi was born a woman and who continued to live as a woman in that sense, because she was raised as a man. She was raised just like the other princess. She was taught the art of warfare and he participated. That is one version of the story. But nevertheless, it is said that Shikhandi was the reincarnation of Princess Amba. Princess Amba, it's a long story, I'll not go into that. Amba, Ambalika and Ambika, the three princes of, the three daughters of King Shalya, who were brought by Bhishma for the marriage of his nephew, Vichitravirya. But in the process, this Princess Amba has already fallen in love with another prince, and that is why she says that I cannot marry your nephew because I have already given my heart to this prince. So Bhishma lets her go, but eventually the other prince refuses to take her because he has lost in battle with Bhishma, and he says it is not right for me to accept you. And then she comes back to Bhishma and she says that now that I've been rejected by him, now you should marry me. But then Bhishma says that I cannot marry you because I've taken this vow of brahmacharya. So eventually this Princess Amba is so very infuriated, again a story of how anger and the sense of revenge can, you know, poison one's mind, even poison the mind over many, many lifetimes. That's the story of Amba. She takes a vow that she will be the source or the reason for Bhishma's death, and she is reborn in the form of Shikhandi. So all said and done, Bhishma has taken this vow that if Shikhandi comes before him, he will not fight. So that was where the vulnerability of Bhishma lay, and clearly the Pandavas will look to capitalize on that vulnerability. So that is why Duryodhana says that, you know, we depend so much on Bhishma. Bhishma is the great warrior, but we have to protect him. We have to ensure that at no time he comes face to face with Shikhandi, because at that time he's going to drop his arms and then he's vulnerable. So this is the 11th verse in the first chapter. I think we'll have to end there. There were a couple of questions which were asked. I really was hoping that I'll have the time to go through them. One of them was, we mentioned a couple of warriors. Satyaki on the side of the Pandava army, Kritavarma on the side of the Kaurava army, but both of them were very, very close confidants and friends of Lord Krishna and commanders of the Narayani Sena. One warrior chooses to fight on the Pandava side because he says that Dharma is on this side. But Kritavarma also knows that Dharma is on this side, but he is a devout follower of Lord Krishna. Because Lord Krishna promises Narayani Sena to the Kauravas, he chooses to fight on the side of the Kauravas, even though he is completely aware that he is fighting on the side of Adharma. So who was right in this, in these two characters, Satyaki and Kritavarma? That was one of the questions that one of the listeners asked. I really thought I would be able to go into that, but nevertheless, I'll come to that eventually, because it's a very, very important question and a symbolism which is very important as we go through the Bhagavad Gita too. But we'll have to conclude with that here. Thank you, dear listeners, for joining me. I'll meet you all again next week at 7:30 p.m. for the next episode of the Gita series. We'll continue the first chapter. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. I'll meet you all again next week. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu and his team for the Vahini Satsang, the last segment of today's Thursday Live. Happy listening.